Joke all you want, but we're burning this place to the ground, and you all need to learn this lesson. If I weren't around, if they weren't around," he gestured toward the Walters, "then any one of your plans might have resulted in someone dying unnecessarily. Never take an unnecessary risk. The last thing I want is for you to go home a party member short because you either didn't do enough research or you let your pride carry you into a battle you didn't have to fight. Do you understand?" The guild members all nodded, looking a little defeated because of Nick's words even after having won the major battle earlier. "I'm sorry," Nick quickly added as he didn't want to bring everyone's spirits crashing down. "I know you all are strong, and you might come out perfectly fine. But let's not take the risk. Let's never take the risk. Let's burn that temple to the ground, and then we can go home and throw all of you the celebration you deserve."
But what if there are valuables? Like gold?
Adele asked, her eyes showing that loot was the true concern behind her wanting to respect the old building. "Then you have ice magic. You can cool off the remains and fish out the gold after," Nick answered, addressing Adele's concern.
"Fine."
Adele relented, walking over to the surrounding buildings with the other guild members. Everyone broke boards off the structures and began piling them up against the sides of the temple. With even Adele, the priest, being able to easily carry 100 pounds of lumber without a problem, they piled up heaps of boards on every side of the temple in less than 10 minutes. "Want to do the honors?" Nick asked his friend Alan, pulling out a lighter and handing it to him. "I already got the tools we need," he replied as he called his drone over and began tampering with it. A moment later, the quadcopter was fitted with a small tube and a small canister, causing its engines to go into overdrive as it carried the extra weight into the air. Then, after swaying back and forth while Alan got used to piloting it with the extra weight, the drone started firing streams of what looked like burning napalm across the base of the building, turning the entire temple into a massive bonfire. Only moments after the fire began, the smoke must have filled the interior of the temple, and the voices of the summoners could be heard. At first, it was panic, and then screams of desperation as the flames continued to burn brighter and hotter. Eventually, the screams faded into nothing, and the XP notifications rolled in as the fire continued to burn.
"You have gained 3,521 EXP. You have leveled up. You have 5 unassigned stat points. Congratulations! Get in the Zone 2 has evolved into Get in the Zone 3. Congratulations! Spear Throwing 2 has evolved into Spear Throwing 3. Hound of Helsing has evolved into Hound of Helsing 2. You have been awarded +1 to your class's primary attribute, Charisma. Congratulations! You have killed the C-grade dungeon sub-boss, Malgath the Unyielding. You have been awarded the Soul Stealer's Ring. The Soul Stealer's Ring, a ring adorned with a small, glowing gemstone. It grants the wearer the ability to drain life force from an enemy with every aura-based strike that connects the wearer with the enemy, siphoning their vitality through that connection."
Nick quickly applied his free stat points to Charisma and then dismissed the notifications. "I guess that's it then," he said, thinking that the threat had been neutralized. Even if he was sure it was, that didn't mean they could give up their duty any sooner. They needed to make sure that they finished the job by staying around and clearing the rubble of anyone that had resistance to fire damage and didn't need to breathe.
"We still need to collect the spectral artifacts, though,"
Adele replied as she stared at the collapsing temple ruins, the fire and the weight of the boards leaning against the walls causing them to topple piece by piece. "Huh?" Nick asked, thinking for a moment about what she was talking about. Then he remembered. The quest. The quest's spectral purge had been very specific. They needed to destroy the spectral threat that haunted the ruins to the west, and in order to prove that they had done that, they needed to bring back spectral artifacts as proof of their kills. "Oh, now I remember. Yeah. What do you think those are?"
"I don't know, but I have a feeling this fire isn't going out anytime soon,"
Siowa sighed. "Yeah, you're right. Anyone with mana, start shooting the fire with some ice magic. Let's cool it off and hunt through the remains," Nick said. He'd have joined them right away, but he was completely tapped out himself after casting the Holy Fire ability. It had destroyed a ton of the undead enemies, but it had also zeroed out his mana supply and left him without even enough juice to freeze an ice cube. Luckily enough, even if most of the guild had burned out their mana, Mr. Walters hadn't. As the observer, he had his entire supply remaining, and as he summoned a veritable winter storm down on the once-burning temple, nearly instantly freezing it, Nick realized that his regression had changed the old man's course in life. The famous muscle maniac from his last life, who was known for being the solution when prolonged fights would drain his party's mana, was now using a spell at a level that shocked Nick.
"There!"
Mr. Walters said with a big grin as he finished his blizzard spell and turned to Arnold.
"See that, kid? Even your old man has a few tricks up his sleeve."
"That's... wow,"
Spencer muttered, having a jaw-drop moment as he stared at the aftermath, wondering what everyone else was, too. How had Mr. Walters gotten that much mana from training for such a short period of time? It hadn't even been a full year since they had gotten the ice magic book.
"The healing skill I use requires mana, so I already had a good magic base. Thanks to the materials you've provided, though, I've really been able to improve it, wouldn't you say?"
Mr. Walters said, looking quite proud of himself. Nick nodded.
"I would, and I would expect nothing less from the Workout King himself."
"Every muscle must be exercised."
Mr. Walters kept his head high, looking rather pleased with himself due to the praise as Nick and his children heaped on compliments. After enough time had passed that Nick and the others were certain it was safe, they started to tear apart the ashy remains of the ruins. At the center of what was once the temple, there were the corpses of what Nick guessed were the necromancers. Their flesh melted from their bodies, leaving cracked, brittle, ash-covered bones remaining.
"Nothing here,"
Nick said as he checked around the bones, shifting boards as he looked for anything that could be the spectral artifacts. It was then that Maria yelled,
"Found something!"
and drew everyone's attention to where she was. There, in the middle of the room, Maria had managed to unearth the corpse of what looked like the commander of the group. Nick guessed that he was the leader by the necklace that hung across his neck, somehow unburned even as the rest of the body had been incinerated by the flames. It was a thick, heavy, glowing silver chain with a medallion attached to the end of it that bore an insignia Nick had never seen before.
"What in the heck is that?" Nick wondered aloud as he stared at the medallion.
"I think that's our spectral artifact, our proof of quest completion,"
Maria said as she handed it to Nick.
"Good, because if it's not, there's nothing else here,"
Reggie remarked with a laugh as he continued to use a two-handed maul with a small 16-pound head at the end of it to clear rubble during his investigation.
"Well, we'll take it back. With this, combined with all the weapons and armor we're bringing, we should be able to do fine," Nick said.
"Not to mention the bracelets already track the kills. I don't know why they'd still want an artifact,"
Siowa pointed out, staring at the kill count number on her bracelet. This caused Nick to pause, staring at the medallion.
"Yeah, the bracelets already do track the kills. They're made with the most advanced tech the world has ever seen. So why do they need this?"
Don't think about it too much,"
Reggie replied as he walked over to where Maria and Nick were standing, the others following suit as each wanted to look at the strange medallion.
"All that matters is that, with the number of quests we've completed here, we should be able to score pounds and pounds of that beautiful spectralite."
Christina looked completely shocked by Reggie's choice.
"What? An ore? A typical blacksmith! Why would we waste our completion credits on ore when we could be getting real rewards? Didn't you check out the list of options? Didn't you see those infernal gloves? The void-forged armor?"
"I can make better stuff than those," Reggie boasted.
"Plus, all I need is ore, and we get over 10 times more items than if we just buy the stuff pre-made."
"That's true," Nick said, and saw the rest of the group nodding in agreement.
"So, spectralite it is. A nice, solid, reasonable choice. Let's go stock up on ore and get back to the guild base. We'll throw a party when we get back to celebrate the first completed raid. Now let's get back safe and sound.
Works for me. The drone made a map on the way here, so I have the best route already set. We should be able to avoid the enemies even if they respawn somehow,"
Alan said, showing Nick the monitor with a top-down view of the path they should take.
"You know, I can never tell if you're the perfect artificer or the perfect scout, but great job,"
Nick replied, patting him on the back.
"He'll be the perfect artificer when he finishes making me some tools for my lab,"
Topaz quipped playfully, the group all in high spirits as they slowly made their way back toward the dungeon entrance.
Chapter 14. With every step Siowa took through the yard to the door of her house, she felt like her entire body was broken down from all the fighting. Even after Mr. Walters had healed her overtaxed muscles, and she had even spent a good while relaxing in the hot tubs following the party Nick had thrown to celebrate completing the dungeon, she was still sore all over. Especially her back and biceps. She had overused her ogre might bracelet, which boosted her raw strength and muscle power temporarily. It was especially straining when manifesting aura into her class's special move at the same time. When she reached the door, she could hear talking, which to her seemed a little strange. She was coming in late, closer to midnight than her family would ever admit most guests, yet from the sound of what was on the other side of the door, she knew it had to be a visitor. When company came over was the only time her mother would ever talk solely in English without slipping in a few Hangul words as she code-switched between English and the language of her birthplace. "I'm sure she'll be home any minute," she could hear her brother say as she stood there, hand on the doorknob, wondering who could be waiting for her. The only people she hung out with or talked to, the only people that she believed her mother would let into their home so late at night, had all been at the party she just left.
"Wait, is this about me not going to college? Is it a guidance counselor?"
Siowa wondered, her head turning around as she tried to see if there was a car park nearby on the street or anything else that might give her a clue as to who was there. For a moment, she even considered texting Will to pick her back up so she could go back to the guild and avoid whatever nonsense was waiting for her inside her own house.
"There's no need to worry, because it seems she's already here," the stranger inside said, his chilling voice filled with enough aura that even through the door Siowa could feel the powerful crushing force of each syllable.
"Come on in. Open the door and join us," the man beckoned.
Hesitantly, she put down her phone and she opened the door. Inside, where normally her family would be all seated playing cards or goofing off, she saw a man seated at their dining room table and drinking a cup of tea. He appeared unbothered by anything and anyone around him as the others stood near him. He was familiar somehow, though she could not place exactly where she'd seen him, but she knew instinctively that he was a man whose face she absolutely knew she should know.
"There's no reason to stand there quietly. Come in, sit down, have a cup of tea. We have an important matter to discuss concerning you and my grandson's future," the old man said, his words casual but his presence and the aura leaking off him reminding her that what he said was likely not a suggestion. It was a command.
Nick's grandfather, she thought, finally realizing who he was. She suddenly felt paralyzed as her chest tightened.
She looked over at Tejo, who gave her the "I don't know what's going on or what to do either" look. She then forced herself to smile and do what the old man said. After all, this was a man who could level the entire neighborhood, and not only would he get away with it, he'd pay the right people and the news the next morning would call him a hero. That was the level of power this man had, the man who would force Nick from house and home. As Siowa sat down, her mother brought over a cup of tea and put it in front of her. It was such a strange action. After she was old enough to make tea herself, there had never been a time when her mother had served her tea and not the other way around. But here she was, receiving tea from her smiling mother.
"I'm sure with how close your grandson is with my daughter, we will have a lot to talk about, now and in the future. It's just so good to finally meet one of Nick's family members,"
her mother said to Mr. Gallows, as if this were just some polite meetings of the families. However, her mother knew Nick's story, and her mother also knew why Nick hadn't even bothered to visit his own grandfather at his graduation, despite the old man showing up, so there was no way her mother was actually this happy about the visit. She was only trying to cut the tension and ease the awkwardness.
"So that's why you didn't call me and tell me to rush home. That we had company,"
Siowa thought, commending her mother for her effort. It was hard for Siowa, now a seasoned dungeon diver, to be around the aura this man let off, so she could only imagine how much her mother, who hadn't leveled up even once and only worked desk jobs, had to be feeling.
"Well," Mr. Gallows said after a moment of silence, "I believe we do indeed have a lot to talk about in regards to the future. Specifically, the upcoming contest."
This caused Siowa to gulp. She knew what he was referring to. The airship battle. She also knew that Nick didn't want to compete. He had worked out deals with Rosemary to get everything he wanted without having to assume the mantle of the gallows heir.
"I'm sure Nick will do great,"
Siowa said.
"But what does that have to do with me?"
"There's no need to lie to me. We both know that Nick won't do well at all. He's planning to throw the match in favor of Rosemary, defeating his cousins and putting her on the throne in place of himself, Mr. Gallo said with certainty. But that's not news to you. I'm sure you've known that longer than I have.
That's his choice to make,
Siowa replied, and then, unable to stop herself, she had to add.
I'm sure that if the money was worth putting up with an awful old man like you, then he wouldn't be throwing it away for a cure you could have already given him. Though I suppose asking his own flesh and blood to cure him from the poison this stupid airship contest already inflicted him with might be a little much. Right? Why would I ever assume that a sociopathic grandfather would care about his grandson, or that the toothless dad the grandfather raised would do anything either? Who knows? Maybe the father's inability to care for his son.
I always forget how peasants, no matter how much money they've managed to scrape together.
Excuse you!
Siowa's mother had dropped her veneer of politeness and had been about to go off on Mr. Gallows, with her father joining, mouth open and prepared to yell, when the old man simply put a finger on the table and released enough aura to loudly snap the table in two, silencing them all instantly. It was a power that even Mr. Walters, whom Siowa considered one of the strongest men she knew, couldn't emulate.
I will finish what I am saying uninterrupted, the old man stated, sighing. See? This is what I mean. Your words are tactless, unwanted gifts foisted on those around you. Someone of proper, noble birth would have gifted those words with circumstance and poise. They would have wrapped them up with metaphors and imagery to match the mood and occasion, yet you just blurted them out like a child. If you wished to criticize my parenting, then you should have been more careful with your words. After all, a rampaging elephant may not step on the ant that bit him, but instead crush the entire colony quite by accident.
Tejo, the only one close to being as strong as Siowa, moved to her side, standing right beside her as he put a hand on her shoulder to let her know he had her back.
I don't care how rich or strong you are. Get out of my house right now!
Siowa's father insisted, looking like he was about to cough blood as he struggled to speak his mind despite the aura Mr. Gallows emanated.
Yeah,
Siowa's mother yelled.
Apparently all of the money in the world couldn't even buy you manners.
Oh, it's amusing how you all band together like peasants with pitchforks are wont to do,
the old man remarked with a chuckle.
However, let me be absolutely clear. My civility only extends to you so long as my grandson is concerned. If he does not become the heir, then... Well, I'm an old man without many years left in my life. I wonder what I should do to relieve my frustration so I do not die with that resentment.
Siowa could tell that her mother and her father wanted to say something else, but even she had trouble moving to open her mouth as the old man stood up, pulled a billfold from his pocket, dropped several $100 bills that landed on the broken table, and calmly walked out of the house. The door shut behind him, and the aura that had gripped the entire room was released, leaving the four of them gasping for air as Siowa looked at her family. She was grateful for their help, but also concerned for them. The old man's words were no idle threat. It was clear what he meant and why he had come.
You know, you could have picked a normal boy, one that came with a regular family that actually liked their own son.
Siowa's mother grumbled as she took the tea from in front of Siowa and drank it back in one go like she was shooting a shot of liquor.
Oh, don't say that. We all love Nick, don't we, Tejo?
The dad replied with a laugh, knowing that Siowa's mother was only joking.
Of course. He's my savior. He rescued me from certain death in that lizard dungeon. He's also the only one I can tease about not being able to handle spicy food during the family dinners. Though I do feel like he's a bit of an old man when I talk to him sometimes,
Tejo answered with a shrug.
Yeah, well, the boy is fine, but that grandfather is not getting an invite if there is a wedding.
Her mother raged as Siowa began clearing away the destroyed table and teacup.
You know, Siowa, we'll always support you no matter what you do, right?
Her dad asked, coming around and putting himself in front of her.
Yeah, I know,
she said.
Good. Then you should also know not to worry about us no matter what that old man says,
her dad added as he gave her a big hug.
We'll be fine, as long as we have you.
As comforting as those words were, and as loving and amazing as her family was, their love only made it that much harder to deal with what was to come, since she couldn't risk anything happening to them because of her. On the other hand, She also didn't want to be the reason Nick might suffer. The grandfather had made an impossible request of her, and as she held her father tightly, she just wanted everything to be over, to go back a few hours to the time when she was eating chips, drinking cold cider, and laughing with Nick, Alan, Topaz, and the others, and just not come home instead. To just stay there, and never meet the monster that had been waiting for her. Chapter 15. You okay? Nick asked Sioha when she showed up in front of the guild at 5 a.m. He didn't know what to make of the state she was in as she stepped out of Will's car and just stared at Nick. Her hair was a mess, and she was wearing actual pajamas, loose-fitting ones with two tiny bear ears at the top of the hoodie, instead of the gym clothes she usually showed up in. The outfit looked like it could double as a Halloween costume. Also, she wasn't wearing her usual pink bubblegum-flavored lipstick, and her expression was flat and lifeless like she was pretending to be a zombie. Her eyes even looked a little bloodshot. Nick took a second to process what he was seeing, since it would be an understatement to say her appearance was shocking. But the moment his brain sparked back to life, he rushed over and gave her a big hug as Will, ever the gentleman, drove off and left the two of them alone. The hug felt like it lasted forever. At first, she just let him hold her. But then she returned his hug, and finally, as she let go, he did too. "Do you want to talk about it?" Nick asked. "You know I'm here for you, right?" She nodded.
"I know. I just want to lift. I want to lift until I can't lift a single freaking thing."
Nick didn't say anything else as the two went into the gym and found a bench off in a corner. She had just done legs the day before, so letting her pulling motion muscles relax a little was the game plan. She started off on chest and shoulders with a combination of flat bench supersetted with Arnold presses. It was a good combination since, even though they both hit the deltoids, the flat bench mostly just focused on the pectoral and tricep muscles, while the Arnolds allowed her to isolate the posterior, medial, and anterior deltoids, the muscles that, if left undeveloped, could allow serious damage to her shoulder joints in the future. These were the simple things Nick thought about as he watched Sioa work out, helping her with the bench.
"How is it not awkward when guys spot each other?"
Sioa finally broke the silence as she racked the plates and moved to dumbbells. "What do you mean?" Nick asked.
"I mean, like, the entire time I'm down there, all I can see is your... well, you know, it's kind of hard to miss. It's just, like, staring down at me. Like, it's disappointed that I can't lift more."
Sioa mumbled in embarrassment as she started looking for the right weight. "You lifted a fine amount. I'm sure there is nothing but heads held high in your future," Nick replied with a chuckle. "Though, I don't know. Usually when I'm benching, all I think about is the bar. I feel like if I let my attention drift anywhere else, it'll be the end of my reps."
That's a good point.
Sioa chuckled a little as she lifted the weights like she was going to get a rep in, but then stopped and put them down.
"It's just... what the hell is wrong with your grandfather? With your dad? With your whole dang family?"
"I don't know, but those are all good questions. I'd have used a few four-letter words, though."
"That bastard has the audacity to call me and my family peasants when he doesn't even have the dignity to be a good father. He can't, because if he did, he wouldn't have let his son throw you out, much less made him."
"I see," Nick thought, finally having burned through the stress to the heart of what was bothering Sioa. He had wondered how long the pajama princess would work out before she finally got to venting. The only problem was, following her outburst, he didn't know what he was supposed to say. He didn't know if he was supposed to agree with her, pat her on the shoulder, or give her another hug. There wasn't a book or a class that had prepared him for this. He waited for her to continue.
"I mean, do you know what that bastard did? What that freaking jerk did? He came to my house and threatened my family! He threatened my family, Nick!"
Sioa raged, dropping the bombshell of information on Nick's lap. "Oh my God." Nick's eyes opened wide as he heard what Sioa said.
"Right? That's what I felt like too. Like, we have to do something. We have to get back at him. We have to stop him, but what can I do? What can you do? That man is strong enough to crush us all beneath his thumb, but we can't just let him get his way. We can't just give up."
Sioa looked like she was about to break down in tears. "Yeah. We can't take him head on," Nick agreed.
"How the hell did he even die in the future? If they were people as strong as he is, shouldn't they have stopped the apocalypse?
Most of the older generation of divers like Grandfather died before the apocalypse, Nick explained. Or at least, most of the ones in our city died before it fell. This caused Siowa to blink and then stare at Nick incredulously, like he had just said something incredibly stupid.
What?
Siowa asked.
What did you say?
What do you mean, what did I say? Nick didn't know what was going on.
I mean, what did you just say? Did you say all the super-powerful, older generation divers died right before the apocalypse?
Yeah, why? Nick asked, still not understanding. They're all old. That's what old people do, they die of old age. Why is it strange for a 75-year-old man to die of age?
No, a 75-year-old man dies of old age when he's fat because he'd rather eat garbage and play games than work out, or he spent his whole life smoking, or he's got some pre-existing heart condition. But not healthy people. Not fit people. Fit, powerful, athletic people like your grandfather don't just die before 80. Even if the average man used to die before 80, the average bodybuilder used to live to 82. And those were lifespans before the portals first broke out and messed up all the health statistics with the stat sheets. Nick, there is no way someone that powerful and that evil will die before he hits 100. Evil bastards like him never die early. They're like villainous emperors in poorly written sequels where no matter what happens to them, somehow they survive.
Siowa, you can say that all you want, but I'm just telling you what happened. He died. They all did. All one after another from being old. Who knows? Maybe it's something to do with the dungeons or aura or something.
That can't be right. Even the women. None of them reached 85.
I mean, there was one girl who was near 85. My grandfather's old friend Ironjaw, but she still died before the apocalypse. As the words left Nick's mouth, he couldn't help but feel stupid. In fact, he felt incredibly dumb. How had he missed something so obvious? If one or two of them had died, that would make sense. But for all of them to die, it didn't compute. Nick needed to back up from that thought. Hold on, go back. What did my grandfather threaten exactly? What did he do?
We didn't spell it out, the vague jerk. All he did was make it clear that if you don't win the air contest, there will be consequences. And I don't know what those consequences will be, but they sure as hell sounded like he'd kill my family or something worse.
Siowa explained. What the hell? I was going to let Rosemary win. We even made agreements that she'd help us with several of our projects in reply, and the help would be immediate. Oh, if I'm waiting for Grandfather to die and the company to be passed, I'll be waiting too long, Nick said. I need the assistance Rosemary said she'd provide right away.
That's true. And you need that cure, Nick. Even though you don't mention it, it's not like I don't see you wince every now and then from the pain the condition causes.
Siowa added.
You need that cure. Topaz needs that ingredient. We can't back out now.
But what about your family? Nick asked, feeling like there was no way that he could throw the competition now. He'd never forgive himself if he put them at risk.
If we give in here, he'll use them every time he needs something. His kind don't stop using a tool they know works just because they've already done it once before. We'll be slaves to his will if we give in now, but... Nick,
Siowa said, looking him dead in the eyes.
I didn't tell you this to change your mind. I told you this so you know what's happening and so you know it's him, not you, that's responsible for this crap. You're not him, and from the time I've spent with you, I know you'll never be him. So don't feel guilty. Don't feel like you put me in this situation. He's the jerk.
Nick's expression fell. Even if she was right, even if this was all on his grandfather, he still needed a game plan. Well, then what are we going to do?
For now, I don't know. I know he said it would only be after the airship was thrown that he'd lose his temper, but I didn't want to take the chance. I couldn't sleep. I set up more cameras in and around my house than a bank vault. I'm hoping to find whoever it is he was spying on us, but that's for another day. I just want to work out now and blow off some steam.
That's fair. Nick understood what she meant. Sometimes when you were dealing with a stressful situation, the best thing to do was to not think about it,
to move on and do what you needed to do. If he were in her shoes, this would be one of those times, too. He'd be just like her, and he'd want to focus on tackling the things he could do rather than worry about the things he couldn't change. All right, then. Do you want to knock out that set of Arnolds you've been putting off this entire talk? Then get back on the bench?
I'd rather get Mr. Disappointment to raise his head high,
Siowa replied, referencing their earlier banter with a mischievous grin on her face as she licked her lips like she was about to eat dessert. The change in atmosphere was so quick that Nick didn't even have a chance to react as they were both interrupted by the sound of the doors to the gym opening and a loud woman's voice.
Oh my god! First an all-night party with food and games and then a pajama party?!
Adele practically shrieked with excitement as soon as she saw Siowa.
This is awesome! Wait right there! I'm going to change and be right back. I have a spare pair in the car just in case I ever get stuck working late at the church and need to crash there. I need to text Maria and the others and let them know. Ugh, the pajama party is on!
Siowa sighed.
Oh, it seems I really will be facing disappointment today.
Chapter 16. The dreaded day had finally arrived, and Nick felt a little awkward as he held the invitation tightly in his hand. In his last life, even the small envelope he was holding wasn't something he was allowed. The poor, barely able to afford bread on a good day pauper he used to be in his last life thanks to being disowned, wasn't even deemed worthy of watching the competition, much less taking part in it. He wondered, since Evan had taken part in it last time but was dead this time, if the card he was holding was actually Evan's in a way, whether he had taken his cousin's place completely. As he looked over at Siowa, his official plus one and combat partner for the second part of the event, he couldn't help but feel a little nervous. While she was looking every bit as calm, collected, and beautiful as the dark-haired princess she was in her handmade one-shoulder mermaid-tailed green dress, it was hard to forget that underneath that cool veneer, she was likely boiling with rage. He hadn't brought up the incident with his grandfather since the morning she had first told him, not wanting to broach the topic before she did. But he knew she was still mad. He also knew that for the last few days, she had been taking countermeasures to protect her family. He'd heard her on the phone more than once with a security company their mutual friend at Dungeon Insurance had recommended, but he didn't know the full extent of whatever measures she was taking. He only knew that she was acting like everything was fine right now. But she might go off like an emotional landmine the moment his grandfather triggered her.
You ready?
Siowa asked, slipping her arm around his so he could escort her inside. Yeah, I'm ready, Nick answered, even though he didn't feel like even going to the competition.
You know, we can always just go home. We can skip the whole thing. I'm sure Rosemary will still win, and you'll still have met your obligation by throwing the match.
Siowa pointed out. No. I have to ensure she does, Nick insisted. I need that medicine to exchange hands today.
All right, then. Let's do this.
Siowa replied, smiling as she pushed open the door to the building, and the two of them stepped inside. When they entered the large, open lobby of the family conglomerate's mega-building, Nick immediately recognized several of his more memorable cousins. There was Roland, the large, powerful man of whom Rosemary had more than once expressed fear. There was also Lady Isolde, who insisted at every meeting that her title, Lady, not be dropped when addressing her. Her brother Finnegan, who never went by his title, and Serafina were also present. They were the only cousins Nick knew at a glance. He assumed that their parents were all there too, and he could see his own parents talking with a few of them as everyone mingled like it was a late-night cocktail party rather than the brutal airship competition. One of the attendants, a man Nick had never seen before, noticed him and went quiet. Then, as more and more people turned to see what was going on, they also stopped talking, silencing the whole room as everyone stared awkwardly at Nick. I told you that you looked good enough to leave people speechless, Nick joked, hoping to cut the tension as he and Siowa remained under observation for a moment. That is, until Grandfather Gallo's laugh filled the room as he walked forward to the front of the crowd.
How amusing! The old man began. No matter how far up the coattails of society and sophistication we ascend, the weak will always be wary and quiet in the presence of the strong, hyenas knowing instinctively to lower their tails and not bark when they see a lion. Why do you all cower at this face? It is the face that one day may run our proud family's conglomerate. It is the face of a man who has overcome assassination attempts, poisoning, poverty, and abandonment to claw his way back up to the top, achieving more in the last few months than any other young heir has in years. You should all be schmoozing him like you sycophants are wont to do.
Thank you, Nick said, smiling even as he gritted his teeth. If this were his first life, he knew he would have been elated to hear even half of those compliments. But now, with all things considered, the praise felt like poison he was being forced to swallow in the name of cordiality.
As if anyone would ingratiate themselves to him, Roland remarked with a laugh. We've all done our research. We all know he hasn't accomplished anything other than becoming the mouthpiece of a better man, Daedalus. Once we crush him here, surely Daedalus will realize that his time and efforts are being wasted on this weak, soft-kept man, and help someone more deserving instead.
Hearing Roland talk about how he'd impress and win over Daedalus by beating up Nick caused Sioa to crack up laughing, causing everyone to look at her in bewilderment. Nick knew why, though. She knew that he was Daedalus, and Roland was saying that Nick didn't deserve any of the praise he got because Daedalus had earned it and not him. Even thinking about the situation made Nick laugh as well. However, the fact that Nick could also see his grandfather chuckling bothered him. He already figured that his grandfather would know his alternate identity since it wasn't something he could hide perfectly, but it still meant he had one more thing he had to worry about. Well, whether Daedalus earned it or I did, the wealth and guild are still in my name, Nick replied. So why does it matter? And who would even think I'd want to ingratiate myself with sycophants who cling like barnacles to the largest whale in the seas rather than earn their own place within these trying waters? My grandfather! Nick turned his eyes toward the old man who had threatened Sioa's family. Always told me about how wonderful and prestigious the elites of our city were, the ones who carried the precious names. But I've only been here a few minutes, and yet still, everyone is behaving like this is a high school cafeteria. The words dug under his grandfather's skin for a moment, but given the scene, the spectacle, and the drama that had occurred, it was not like the old man could easily refute his words. His face just soured as he said,
Indeed. Carry yourselves in a more becoming fashion,
before turning and slowly walking off.
I'll be waiting at the arena for the main event. We shall see then if young Roland or young Nick's words carry more weight. Don't worry. When I prove I'm the best, I'll keep you around as a sparring partner. You may be weak, but at least you're not as weak as the rest,
Roland boasted before turning and walking off as well.
The way you fought in that graduation dungeon really got under his skin. He's been itching to have a match with you ever since,
Rosemary explained as she appeared out of the crowd and walked over to Nick and Sioa.
I heard he's even studied the recordings of that dungeon several times, analyzing your fighting styles.
Does he really not see any of you as a threat? Nick asked, not remembering Roland even placing during the last airship competition.
It would appear that way.
Rosemary frowned.
I just hope I don't get him in the first elimination round. I'm confident against the others, but not against him.
I think you do a lot better than you think, Nick assured her, suspecting that Rosemary might have been the reason Roland didn't do well in his last lifetime.
Side note,
Sioa said, redirecting the conversation.
But what's with the rest of these people? How come they're all acting like children at a Thanksgiving dinner, gossiping and bickering rather than making connections and focusing on contacts? This is a closed event, for the family only. Everyone here is either a direct blood relative or a guest brought by one,
Rosemary told her.
If it weren't for the fact your boss...
Boyfriend, Nick quickly interjected, correcting the misunderstanding.
Really?
Rosemary raised an eyebrow.
Isn't she... poor? No. Only people in ivory towers as high as you would think that.
Sioa snapped offensively. Rosemary turned to stare at Sioa for a second.
You have more money than any other 18-year-old I know of, barring Nick. Why would I say you're poor? I was going to say Nick's business partner. I thought you two both ran the guild, and that's why you always spend so much time together. Forgive me for mistaking the nature of your relationship. I just thought it might be awkward, dipping the pen in company ink. Oh well. If you two are happy, who cares?
The Lady Isolde will be quite disappointed if she ever finds out.
But isn't she his cousin? Not close enough cousins to stop her?
Rosemary explained with a frown.
Anyway, I'm going to head over to the staging area myself. In case you've been out of the loop, the first round of the tournament is set to be an elimination match. I don't know who I'm against, but if it's you, well, just uphold your end of the deal.
I will, Nick assured her, trying to gauge Siowa's reaction as he did, but the poker face she had put on when they first stepped foot in the building was once again stopping him from understanding how she felt about what was happening around them.
See you in the staging area.
Rosemary waved before departing. Nick gave his cousin a nod before turning to Siowa.
Well, what do you think we should do now?
Mingle, eat some hors d'oeuvres, meet my family.
If there is an option that doesn't involve me meeting your family, I'd rather take that one.
Siowa interrupted.
Fair, that's fair,
he replied, understanding exactly where she was coming from as he walked with her in the same direction Rosemary was heading. To reach the staging area, they had to walk to the end of the lobby and take an elevator. Nick was a little shocked that despite there being only two elevators, no one boarded the same one he and Siowa took. It was clear that, while they tolerated him being there, Nick's decision to leave the family manor and scorn Grandfather Gallows openly had left him being treated like a pariah even after the old man had openly praised him. No one wanted to be associated with him. If he didn't do well, or the tension between him and his grandfather escalated, they probably feared they'd get caught in the wake and be exiled too. When the elevator door opened at the bottom floor, Nick was greeted with the large, specially reinforced concrete training area. It was massive, with multiple fighting places, a dungeon portal, screens everywhere, as well as training equipment, weapons, armor racks, and personalized mana concentration facilities for mages. It basically felt like all the amenities of Nick's guild, plus even more, stuffed into a single airplane hangar-sized underground bunker.
Yeah, we've got better back home,
Siowa remarked, but Nick wasn't sure about that. He couldn't help but look over at the blue gated-off portal on the left side of the hangar. The way the surrounding area was set up, chairs facing the portal, monitoring devices ready with a table and wristbands already placed next to it. He knew that it would likely be the staging ground for the second part of the competition.
I don't know. I wouldn't mind if we had a portal in our base, Nick muttered.
One that could blow up or turn red if we don't watch it. No, it's best to keep those away from our home,
Siowa replied.
Yeah, our home,
Nick repeated, liking the last two words. It really did feel like their home. But pushing that thought aside, he walked over to the largest arena in the center of the bunker, taking one of the front seats as he saw Roland and Rosemary already sitting down, waiting for the event themselves. Each of them, as well as their grandfather, had a private box situated in the middle of each of the arena's eight sides, while the non-participants were to be seated in rows of chairs set up on either side of the private boxes. The bright floodlights that illuminated the massive concrete arena, which itself could hold a commercial jet, gave an eerie, underground parking lot fight club type of vibe to what was an incredibly expensive installation. It was an atmosphere that should have left Nick feeling uncomfortable, but after years of hiding in concrete basements and bunkers, parking lots as well, it made Nick somehow feel more at home. The cold, still air and halogen bulb lighting made him feel like he had a home turf advantage even at the heart of enemy territory. Taking a moment from his thoughts, he looked up at Grandfather Gallows, who just stared at the center of the arena, waiting for the competition to proceed, acting as if he didn't want to talk to or deal with anyone else.
Of course he thinks everyone is beneath him,
Nick thought as he gripped Siowa's hand a little tighter, happy she had come with him, and waited for the festivities to begin. It took a total of 30 minutes for everyone else to reach the underground floor, but once they did, a young woman who looked like she could be the ring girl at a UFC match took the stage.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us for today's competition, which will decide the fate of the Gallows conglomerate. As you have all been informed, the first round will be a series of elimination matches between the bright and upcoming heirs. Each will be randomly paired off with an opponent, whom they will have to defeat to make it to the next stage. Those who fail will be forced to give up their rights to become the heir of the company,
the woman explained before gesturing to a large scoreboard.
Now for the first match,
she began as two names appeared on the board.
We have the young Finnegan Gallows versus Nick Gallows. Finnegan, if you would please enter the blue side, and Nick, if you would please enter the red side of the arena, we can begin our first match. Knock him dead,
Siwa said, giving Nick's hand a squeeze for good luck as he stood up and made his way to the arena. When he entered the combat area, he looked up at the enclosed box seating to the right, at Grandfather Gallows who was sitting there, a grin on his face as he watched Nick step forward.
Let there be blood, Grandfather Gallows declared, his voice filling the auditorium as he kicked off the first match.
Chapter 17.
Come now, cousin,
Finnegan taunted Nick the moment the start of the fight was announced, his voice silk over steel.
A suit? This isn't an office party. Surely you could have prepared better than this.
Nick smirked. He knew Finnegan's words were barbed hooks meant to unsettle him, but he wouldn't bite. Instead, he focused on Omnitrainer's insight, seeking any edge he could find against his adversary.
Finnegan Gallows. Finnegan Gallows epitomizes the archetype of the roguish charmer, his persona cloaked in mystery and mischief. A master of disguise and quick thinking, his charismatic demeanor concealing layers of cunning and resourcefulness. With a silver tongue and a flair for the dramatic, he effortlessly weaves through the shadows of uncertainty, embracing the thrill of unpredictability. Insight note. Finn's great strength lies in his ability to thrive amidst chaos, his adaptability and quick thinking serving as formidable assets in the face of adversity. To unlock Finn's full potential, training sessions should focus on enhancing his agility, stealth, and tactical ingenuity.
Without warning, Finnegan lunged, his blades crackling with an electric enchantment. But Nick was ready. He sidestepped, allowing his opponent's momentum to carry him past and thrust forward with his spear, aiming not to wound, but to pin.
Predictable,
Finnegan sneered, barely avoiding the strike, his wiry form dissolving into a quicksilver stream of evasion. Every muscle coiled. Nick anticipated Finnegan's next move, his senses sharpened by his training and determination. As Finnegan lunged again, Nick pivoted with precision, narrowly avoiding the razor-sharp blade aimed for his side. He retaliated with a swift strike of his own, aiming for Finnegan's exposed flank. With an expert twirl, he deflected Nick's attack, the clash of their weapons echoing through the cavernous arena.
Is that all?
Finnegan's words were breathless now, the charade of ease beginning to crack as he realized the depth of Nick's resolve. Their dance was one of flashing steel and fleeting shadows, each move countered by another more desperate, more cunning. Sweat dripped into Nick's eyes, the sting a reminder of what was at stake. With an effort of will, Nick summoned holy flames that licked the ground beneath Finnegan's feet. As Finnegan stumbled back, unaware the flames wouldn't hurt him, Nick sent a sheet of ice racing towards him, causing him to lose his footing. Nick followed up with a powerful straight thrust of his spear, but his enemy deftly parried it with a flick of his wrist.
Enough!
Nick bellowed, the words enhanced by his high charisma, making Finnegan flinch. Finnegan's cloak swirled behind him as he stalked towards Nick with the quiet, calculated movements of a predator. Suddenly, the rogue dipped into a roll, and where he should have reemerged, there was nothing but empty air. Nick prepared to strike, his instincts screaming that something was amiss. He could not afford distraction. Finnegan was a master of misdirection.
Looking for me?
Came a voice from all around, as if the very walls of the arena whispered Finnegan's taunts. Nick pivoted, scanning the arena, searching for any sign of movement, a sliver of red, a flash of steel. But Finnegan had vanished into the environment, a chameleon amongst the stone. A glint caught Nick's eye, a dagger flying straight for his head. He ducked, rolling to the side, feeling the rush of air as the weapon whistled past. Before he could regain his footing, another barrage of daggers followed, arcing through the air with lethal intent. Nick raised his spear, deflecting a dagger with the shaft, then spun, catching another and flinging it away. He couldn't pinpoint Finnegan's location, but he could anticipate the trajectory, the rhythm of the throws.
Come out, you coward!
Nick called out, hoping to provoke an opening. His voice echoed off the arena's high walls. Then, with the barest shimmer of light, Finnegan reappeared, a dozen paces away, his cloak now swirling with retrieved daggers. That split second of visibility was all Nick had been waiting for. With a sudden charge, Nick closed the distance, his sandals of Hermes granting him unearthly swiftness, an echo of Finnegan's own speed. Finnegan's swords flashed, an arc of light aimed to overwhelm Nick's defenses. But Nick was a trainer, honed by battles past and future knowledge. Sidestepping, he felt the air shift where Finnegan's blade sought flesh. The electric hum of the sword's near miss sent a shiver along his spine, a reminder of the stab that he narrowly escaped. "Nice try," Nick responded. Finnegan's cloak flared as he spun away from Nick's attacks. "Come now, Nick. Give me something to work with," Finnegan taunted, twin blades dancing once more as he prepared another attack from a different angle. This time, Finnegan came from the side, blades whirling. Nick parried with his spear, sparks leaping as metal clashed against metal. The air filled with the scent of ozone as the electric charge sought its mark, only to find Nick untouchable, his movements precise and deliberate. In the box seats, the other contenders gasped and murmured, enthralled by the display of skill and power. None of them had seen Nick fight in person before, and he was using every ounce of skill he possessed. Nick feigned a thrust, drawing Finnegan into an overcommitment. As the rogue lunged with a sword thrust aimed to incapacitate, Nick twisted away and leapt, the sandals of Hermes granting him an aerial grace that defied gravity. Finnegan's eyes widened for a mere second, but it was enough. "Got you," Nick whispered as he switched weapons and aimed the poisonous spear of returning towards Finnegan.
"Watch the skies!"
Finnegan exclaimed with a laugh, but there was no mirth in it, only the strain of a man trying to predict the unpredictable. He rolled away from the incoming projectile, but not without cost. His cloak snagged on the spear's tip, the weapon tearing fabric and drawing a line of red across his shoulder. The spear returned to Nick's grasp, as promised by its enchantment, slick with blood. Finnegan's eyes narrowed, the wound superficial but telling. It was the first sign of genuine concern on his face, a crack in the facade.
"Nice shot. But you'll need more than tricks," Finnegan retorted, regaining his footing.
His cloak flapped unceremoniously, the tear a silent testament to Nick's precision. Nick didn't respond, instead focusing on the subtle shift in Finnegan's stance. The poisoned shoulder wound affected his balance, a weakness ripe for exploitation. With the crowd holding its collective breath, the two combatants circled, each waiting for the other to reveal their next move. Years of experience, both lived and yet to come, had honed Nick's instincts to a razor's edge. His eyes narrowed, catching the slight tell in Finn's shoulder, predicting the next move before it was made. With a sudden burst of adrenaline, Nick lunged forward, feigning an attack from above. Finnegan's defenses instinctively shifted upwards, anticipating the strike. But Nick was one step ahead. At the last possible second, he redirected his momentum, a sweeping spear strike landing a vicious blow to Finnegan's injured shoulder. Pain flashed across Finnegan's face as he stumbled backward, his grip on his swords faltering. A buzz of murmurs filled the air as Nick gained the upper hand. Regaining his balance, Finnegan gritted his teeth and raised his blades in a last-ditch effort. He held his swords in a white-knuckle grip, his jaw set in determination, but small beads of sweat formed on his forehead, and his breath came in short panic gasps. The once confident rogue now looked like a trapped animal, ready to lash out at any moment. Nick, sensing the opportunity, launched himself towards Finnegan, weaving a tapestry of lightning-fast strikes using his spear. The crowd watched in tense silence as the spear danced around Finnegan, each blow landing with the precision of a surgeon's scalpel. Finnegan parried as best he could, but the sheer speed and power of Nick's attacks left him winded and off balance. A powerful sweep from Nick's spear knocked Finnegan to the ground, where he lay, panting, his skin turning greener by the second. He dropped his swords and uttered the words, "I yield." The arena fell silent, the air heavy with anticipation as Nick stood over Finnegan, his spear poised for the final strike. The crowd held its breath, their eyes fixed on the defeated cousin. But instead of delivering the killing blow, Nick lowered his weapon and extended a hand to help Finnegan to his feet. "You fought well," Nick said, his voice filled with genuine respect. "Better luck next time." Finnegan stared at Nick, a mixture of surprise and gratitude in his eyes. Slowly, he reached out and accepted Nick's hand, allowing himself to be pulled up. The two competitors locked eyes for a moment before Finnegan just flashed his toothy grin again like he always did, exclaiming,
"Ha! Let's skip the fight next time and just have a drinking contest instead,"
as the medical crew ran in from the arena hallway and started to attend to the injured man. Nick looked up at the box where he thought Sioa was, but his orientation had been mixed up during the fight. Instead of seeing the beautiful face of his girl, he was greeted with the cold, stern eyes of Roland staring down at him. For a moment, Nick felt like he was looking at a younger version of his grandfather, the way the young man just stared down at Nick like he was nothing more than an inconvenience Roland was thinking about how to deal with. It unsettled Nick, But he put it out of his mind and finally found Siowa, who wore an even bigger smile than Finnegan as she gave him a thumbs-up gesture and beckoned him back to his seat. As he was just about to return to their private box, Grandfather Gallows broke into a slow, intentional clap. It was a rare gesture, one that few had ever seen from the distant patriarch, and the sound echoed through the arena like a thunderclap. Nick hesitantly nodded to his grandfather and the other competitors, trying not to rock the boat or reveal his final hand until the tournament was over. The only thing that bothered him was the fact that he suddenly hated the idea of throwing a match. He realized he enjoyed the feeling of winning. It was something he couldn't deny, but he also knew that he absolutely couldn't win. He only hoped that throwing the next match wouldn't also require him to take hits or get knocked around like he was training with Mr. Walters again. Chapter 18. So, who do you think will win? Nick asked as he sat down next to Siowa. While he was walking back to the box seats, the next fight had been announced, Serafina versus Roland.
I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm hoping Serafina wins,
Siowa admitted with a sigh.
But probably Roland.
Yeah, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion at this point, Nick replied as he leaned back in his chair. From what I remember of her, Serafina spends more time in her room with books than she does training, and Roland, by the size of those muscles, probably never leaves the training facilities.
I really don't want him to win, though, especially after that nonsense earlier in the lobby. How self-absorbed do you have to be to shout that stuff? Honestly, Nick, I don't want to be that girl, but your family feels like the worst.
Maybe, but at least my parents put food on my plate and a roof over my head for nearly 18 years, Nick replied, feeling compelled to come up with at least something good. That's at least worth something, right?
I'd agree with you more if the food hadn't been poisoned. At least if you were in one of the orphanages Adele volunteers at, the food would have been sans toxin.
Well, maybe. But if I were stuck in an orphanage, I wouldn't have gone to that nice, fancy, expensive school. And I wouldn't have met the cute class president. And so I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now, would I? He replied, putting an arm around her. And that was definitely worth being a gallows.
Even the poison?
Siowa asked. I want to say yes, because it was, but I don't want you to take that as a license to test the theory and poison me again, Nick answered, chuckling.
Then if you say yes, I'll buy you silver chopsticks to make sure your food is safe,
Siowa joked. Then yes, Nick said, feeling like that had been a test. It was something Regia told him once while they were working together in the forge. How his girlfriend had asked him a million dumb what-ifs, from what if she were fat to what if she were an earthworm on a rainy day. Even though none of them made sense, he still gave her an I'd still love you each time. He was about to tease her about how he wanted the poison-detecting silver chopsticks engraved and demand even fancier adornments since she'd agreed to get him some, but it was at this point that Serafina and Roland finally made it to the center of the arena, where they stood calmly facing each other, a good 20 or 30 feet between them.
At that distance, it's going to be good for Serafina,
Siowa noted.
I heard she's a caster.
Let's hope she's a good one on the level of Spencer, Nick said.
You mean your favorite muscle wizard? I wonder if he still even qualifies as a wizard. I think he'd be considered a battle mage, or if things keep going, an eldritch knight, half warrior, half wizard. Just consider how well he did on the front lines of the ectoplasmic dungeon. He held the line the same as the rest of us during that final fight through the ghost soldier-invested town, and that was a high-level raid for anyone our age.
Well, why wouldn't he be able to? No one gets a free pass at the gym. Everyone must suffer equally. Nick laughed. Not to mention, I always thought it was silly that being good at one thing meant you had to be bad at something else. How many times in battle have we had to use spells ourselves to overcome stuff? Specialization leads to... Oh, wow. Nick paused mid-rant as the battle kicked off, and Serafina opened with her first salvo, an explosion of scorching hot fire that shot out of her hands like two twin dragons right at Roland. Roland didn't even dodge the attacks as he pulled a weapon from his inventory, a big two-handed maul with a heavy stone head carved into the shape of a bear, and held it up in front of him. The two large flame dragons struck the head of the maul before dissipating entirely, like they had run into a wall. Her signs rage, Nick mouthed as he saw the weapon. He'd heard of it more than once in his last life. It was a powerful weapon that could, when used properly, negate nearly all elemental magic attacks, so long as the user could get the attack to hit the mole's head first. Even an actual dragon's breath could be blocked by the weapon's head.
That's... I...
Seraphina stammered, shocked that her massive fire-based attack had completely and utterly failed, before she quickly followed up with another attack. This time, it was something familiar to Nick. Ice magic. Not knowing the weapon in Roland's hands, she shot out the magic with all her might. It formed into floating spikes of ice that flew straight at Roland. The spikes would have been enough to fatally impale anyone else, but they cracked and shattered into nothing right in front of the crowd's eyes as Roland used the head of his maul to once more thwart his opponent's efforts.
It seems like she's paid her Daedalus Forum dues,
Siowan noted, also recognizing the very familiar, unique style of magic that was one of their exclusive online offerings. That's not even all, Nick noted as Seraphina, sensing her ice magic fail, switched quickly to lightning, summoning a bolt of lightning that shot out of her hands and sparked across the field, only to be absorbed by the maul yet again like it had struck a lightning rod. She's really studied a lot of different spells.
For all the bragging he does, he's awfully reliant on the tools his father bought him.
I'm sure that, for his kind, he would justify it as simply doing his homework. Nick frowned, feeling bad for Seraphina. She had clearly put a lot of effort into creating an arsenal, yet it had all been destroyed by a single, incredibly powerful, unique weapon. Money had defeated effort.
Admit your defeat now. Your loss is inevitable.
Roland's words filled the arena as he reached Seraphina, his slow, deliberate walk coming to an end as he waited in front of her for a moment, as if he just